Lee Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today's conversation is a powerful one. I'm joined by Sherry Wilsick, founder and president of Clin Audits, a company she launched more than 30 years ago. What began as a six-month exploration has grown into a respected organization serving the pharmaceutical and life sciences industries with integrity, precision, and care. Sherry's story is about resilience, reinvention, and love, both for the business she built and for her late husband and longtime business partner, Dr. Jim Peters, who played a key role in shaping Clin Audits until his passing in 2018. Their partnership in work and in life was built on trust, shared purpose, and a belief in always doing things the right way. Sherry, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you today. So, Sherry, if you would, take us back to that pivotal moment in your career. You had parted ways with Hoffman LaRoche, and then what inspired you to launch Clin Audits?
Well, I think after being downsized, you have to kind of go through some, internal questioning of whether or not you want to continue with the corporate world or whether or not you want to do something different with your life. And I think it was a pivotal moment for me in the sense that I knew that there was a glass ceiling for women. I didn't want to necessarily go back into that. And I thought, if I started my own organization, that I wouldn't necessarily have to deal with the glass ceiling as I had in the past, and I could affect change for other women going forward in terms of that. So I also wanted more for myself and my family, and I wanted some more challenges. And I knew after talking to my husband that although we were existing at that point on two incomes and had recently purchased a home, he was very sweet and said, okay, you know what? I'll support both of us for a year. You see what you can do. And I think that was a very loving, supportive thing for him to do, considering that I had never been in business before. So he had great confidence in me. And
absolutely. And you demonstrated a healthy amount of courage at that time. So where does that come from? Is that in your DNA? Are your parents that way? That takes some guts.
I think, my father was slightly entrepreneurial in the sense that he got downsized a couple of times from his different careers in life and started a small blacksmith business and then ultimately a Mr. Fix-It business. And he did what he want when he wanted. But I've always come from a very strong work ethic. My mother recently retired at 89 years old. So I have a kind of a can-do attitude and very entrepreneur, as you know, Ed.
Yeah, and definitely a strong work ethic, I would say, then based on what your father did and your mother going until 89. That's pretty remarkable. You don't hear that too often.
No, you don't.
So you took 6 months. You said, let's see how this is going to go. You talked to Jim at the time, and he was on board. But looking back, what was it inside you that said, hey, I believe this will work? Like, what was it inside you that said, I can do this, this will work?
I think there was a deep need for me to be successful in my life and to build something from nothing. I think any entrepreneur probably has some of that in them, where you take nothing and you build something, and then you've got something to be proud of. I think being able to contribute to the pharmaceutical industry. I always tell people that I'm interviewing or people new to our organization that the patient is waiting. The patient is waiting for new and effective and safe drugs, devices, biologic gene therapy. We all are, and we all need those. So for me, it's also kind of philanthropic to build something that can be very useful to humankind.
Awesome. So getting back to Jim for a moment, kind of was there from the beginning, initially really just being kind of the supportive spouse and maybe helping you a little bit with the backstage of the operation, but eventually coming into the business himself. So how did the two of you, because this is an important question and it comes up a lot, especially when there's either husband-wife teams or brothers or cousins working together, how do the two of you balance the roles? Because in the office, your business partners, and at home, your husband and wife. So how did the two of you find ways to balance that? Or did you?
Well, I think we had a pretty strong relationship to begin with. It was based in honesty and trust, and I knew that I could, at a very basic level, trust him. And so when I started the company, I'll go back just a smidge. When I started the company, he was there and said, "Hey, I will do the books. I will meet with the accountant. I will, do the invoicing and the billing and all of that." And he was working full time. He was in the animal health pharmaceutical industry. And so at nights and on weekends, he did that, which was wonderful. When he was downsized after a period of time, he came into clin audits after unsuccessfully looking for a job in his career. He decided to come into clin audits, and it was great because he ended up just developing a whole piece of animal health consulting within clin audits. I think you asked, how did we balance that? I think it's really important for both spouses to have their own role in the company well defined so that they're not kind of under the thumb of somebody else. You don't want to have a power struggle in your marriage and in the office. And so I think that that was really quite important to have defined roles where both of us were responsible for. He actually generated revenue. He did consulting and he contributed to the company. So there was something for him to feel very proud of.
So when you look back, once he joined officially and the two of you were working on the business together, but still coming home. So like, was it okay to like bring up business at home and vice versa? Like how did the two of you manage some of those issues? Because that comes up a lot here. And it's like, when is it okay? When is it not okay? Are there rules? Are there no rules? How did the two of you make it work?
So I think early on, we probably made the same mistakes as most people in business. And we brought it home and we would sit maybe before dinner, during dinner, and we would rehash what happened. And it doesn't take a brain surgeon, and no offense to brain surgeons, to know that that isn't going to work for long because there's no boundary. There's no differentiation between the office and the house. And I always say that it was the business was the fourth person that lived in this house. We had a dog, but it's really hard when that happens. So I would suggest and recommend that there be clearly defined boundaries and rules to when somebody can bring something up. If there's unresolved business of the day, to determine what time or when you're going to bring that up and make an agenda even. Make it very disciplined in a way so that it doesn't infiltrate your marriage, your personal life, and resentment doesn't grow.
Yeah, I mean that's a great point. And I know for the years that my dad and I overlapped before I started, or actually when I started the buyout, eventually I had to put that discipline in place Because, we could talk all day and all night about business, and we could, it would permeate family gatherings and everything else. And just like, eventually I was like, Dad, there's not a fire. Nobody's going to go to the ER. It's Saturday. Let's just have dinner. We can deal with this on Monday, I'm pretty sure. And he didn't like it, but eventually he got the message, like, yeah, let's just be a family right now. And let's not, it's hard, it's hard to basically cognitively change hats, if you will, isn't it? I mean, because you're both, right? You're business partners, you're husband and wife. And, it takes a little discipline. I think that's a great point, Sherry.
Yeah.
So talking about some tough stuff here, you've been through some hard times. First Jim's illness, then his passing, then the loss of your father. And all of this, you continue to carry forward. You continue to run clean audits. So got to ask you, how did you keep yourself going through all that, Cherry?
Well, and there was also a death of a 14-year-old dog in there
Ah,
too, who
okay.
had cancer for a year. I
Oh.
think in some ways, I think that clin audits saved my life because I knew that I had devoted, dedicated employees that needed me. Although I do have to say that during those time frames, my employees were really my saviors in a way because they kept the business going when I couldn't. I mean, at the early days. But I think after a while, you realize that you still have a purpose. Your loved ones would want you to continue. And so you do. You find that strength. You pull it out from somewhere deep inside of you and you carry on. And I think that I'm grateful for the company in many ways because it did save my life. It gave me a purpose, especially when my husband died. Because, you know,
Yeah.
when you're married, I was with this man for 33 years. Your identity is with him. And then
Yeah.
when he passes, you have to figure out who you are all over again. And you have to be able to decide what you want with your life. What are you going to do with your life? It's kind of an open slate. And sometimes that's very scary to that stark reality of, oh my God, I'm not with him anymore. And I can be really whoever I want to be, but who is that?
Well, I guess thinking on it as an outsider looking in, all of these pieces of your life were shifting or changing. Yeah, clin audits was something that I guess you could kind of count on. That's going forward. So that sort of became something of a guiding path or a rock or however you wish to metaphor it, but something that you could hold fast to and say, well, I know the company is here.
Yeah,
So.
that's when I said it really
Yeah.
did save my life.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful. So once, or you had mentioned this prior to our having this talk, that after Jim passed, you realized there were some aspects of the business that you were not fully versed in. When he came in, he was handling a lot of the bookkeeping, some of the accounting, some of the financials. And you actually sat down with your accountant or your bookkeeper and said, okay, teach me some of the stuff I don't fully know or understand. So must have been a very stressful point in time or moment, but talk about that for a moment. What was that learning curve like to pick up on essentially the roles that Jim had commanded for so very long that now you needed to immerse yourself in?
Yeah, it was. I tried to start before he passed because I don't know if it was fortunate or unfortunate that we knew that he had cancer. We knew that it was coming on very quickly. And even before he died, I had asked him to sit down with some staff and to recall and put together procedures and processes of what he did. He kind of waited until the very last minute, so a lot of that was not as well written as I would have liked it to have been. But nonetheless, it required that I learn all of, I mean, how to read a P&L and a balance sheet and all of that. And it was ominous for me because I can hardly adequately balance my checkbook. And but I knew, again, this is digging really deep down, that I had to do it. There was nobody else that was going to necessarily do it. So I did it, and it was painstaking because finance is really not something, it's not interesting to me. And so that's why I like the subject matter expert of doing, you know, pharmaceutical
Yeah.
drug development and all of that. So it really took a lot to learn it. And, you know, Thank God the people that were teaching me were very patient and still are, even to this day. They help me a great deal, and I'm indebted to them, let me tell you.
I think sometimes people forget that as entrepreneurs, it's not always a question of how, but who, and it's quite common for us to lean on the skills of others to fill in the gaps in areas where either we're not super proficient or we just don't like doing it, That's true in my
Absolutely.
case.
I think that we need to have people around us that can support us. We can only, I don't think you can't be a master of everything.
No. And I think a lot of times people assume that. And in some cases, we all have touched on all the roles in our operation in some way, shape, or form. You have to, but doesn't mean we're neck deep proficient as, a bookkeeper would be about keeping the books or any other role. So let's probe on that a little more. So you not only lost your life partner, you lost your business partner. And that could really just losing one of those could shake somebody to the core, and you lost both in the same moment. What did you discover about yourself that maybe you didn't know before? What did you find within yourself in that moment or the moments after that you didn't recognize before?
I'm strong. I can do almost anything, and I can rely on myself. I think those, not everybody learns that in their life. And so if there is, if you can find a silver lining in any tragedy, I know I've listened to people who have a cancer, and everybody says, why me? But, and then so there are some people that said, why not me? Do you know what I mean? And I think that there is always something to learn from everything that happens to you, whether it be good or tragic. For me, I just ha there was really no choice. I mean, I didn't have anybody else to really lean on. I had to make a decision. Either I was going to continue with the company and learn it and build it to a point where it could be self-sustaining without Jim, or I could just fold it. And at that point in my life, I needed income, and employees still relied on me. So there was really no choice. And I think in life, sometimes you want to just crawl into bed, and put the covers over your head. And you might do that for a week or whatever, but ultimately, you've got to crawl back out, and you've got to stand on your own 2 feet. So for me, after going through all of that, I can do almost anything. I think
That's
that's what it
amazing.
really teaches you.
I mean, you had to dig deep and finding yourself to do things that you'd not done before. And that was new learning, right? A new opportunity and new
Absolutely.
growth. So if we could talk about that further, those experiences certainly impacted you, but how did it change the way that you lead and connect with your team, moving forward? Like, did that shift? And if so, how did that shift?
Well, I think that for me, it brings you to your knees almost. It humbles you. I believe it made me a little bit more compassionate as a person. And it made me realize that there are a lot of people that are suffering, and I'm not the only person that's suffering, and that I need to be more attuned in terms of being a leader, attuned to people, to listening to everybody's got issues and problems in their lives, to be more flexible, and to give people leeway. People are going through things too. So I think when you lead, you need to lead with compassion. You need to lead being a humble person.
Great points. Great points. And I know, early in my career, it took me a long time to get there because, my mentor, my number one mentor was my dad. My dad was an old naval officer. So how do you think he led? Top down. My way or the highway. And effective maybe for that generation, but for our next gen, not as effective.
So, what were things that humbled you or made you a different type of leader?
Oh, when I tried to lead the way he did, and people said, okay, I quit. And I said, okay, that obviously doesn't work. And I learned a lot about servant leadership and bottom to top leadership. And I think it's natural, even just from being on this podcast and having many guests who are multi-gen leaders, that there's a tendency for that first gen to be a little bit more authoritative in their leadership style. And then especially second gens like myself, we tend to be, we have to be more collaborative. And inherently we tend to be so where I'll lead, but I'll also very much get buy-in, input, ask questions of my team, listen to what they have to say, listen to a lot of voices before making a decision. Whereas others might say, "No, just make the decision and go." I tend to be, let's see what people think,
Right.
and listen to what they have to say. So, speaking of team, what do you think made you and Jim such a successful team? So you were partners in life, but you were very effective partners in business. So just talk about that for a moment.
Sure. We always used to say that we were kind of two halves. I had the technical expertise, subject matter expertise to run the company. I knew what I was talking about and I could prove it. And Jim came in and I was much more type A and Jim was kind of a B, B minus maybe. And so I think that combination was good together because he kind of balanced me out. But also he had a whole like animal health part, even though he knew the pharmaceutical industry, he knew a different segment of the industry. And along with his financial information, I really think that we had like two halves, and then together we had this whole so that we could cover really almost the entire company in terms of the needed information. And where, like you said, where we didn't have the information, we sought out experts like accountants, bookkeepers, and others. You and I were in Vistage for quite a while. And, that helped us with having kind of an informal board of directors for our companies and speakers that they gave us. And, that served as an educational tool for a lot of entrepreneurs.
So, following that up, because a lot of listeners either are engaged in husband-wife teams and governing their business, or in some cases, they're thinking about it. Hey, we've talked about it, because a lot of times you talk about it before you do it. What's a, before somebody, a couple forayed into saying, okay, in addition to being life partners, let's be business partners, what's one really good piece of advice you might give them before they started that journey?
Go to couples therapy. Now, I think you need a strong marriage. I
Okay.
really do. And having a strong marriage doesn't mean you have to be married for 30 years before you embark on something like that. But I do think that both of you need to be pretty secure because there are going to be things that come up that will rattle both of you. And I think respect. I think you have to have respect within your marriage and trust, ultimate trust between the two of you. Because if you don't, then that business, and it goes for business partners, whether or not you're married or not, but especially when you're married. And that other thing, that discipline to respect people's boundaries, giving them space and honoring their ideas that they have, that they bring up. Honoring when they have conflict, honoring that and kind of not poo-pooing it, but taking it quite seriously and working through that. I think all of those skills are needed to be able to be successful business partners.
Yeah, but I think you raised that. I mean, those are all great points, but at the core, hey, if the marriage is not strong, why on earth would the business working together in business be strong or even a good idea? But if it is, then, setting up the methods to make sure that when there is differences, and I'm sure you and Jim didn't always see eye to eye on
Sure, we
business
did
stuff,
not.
but there's a, a constructive way to have that conversation besides, wow, Jim, that's a really dumb idea. And maybe sometimes you felt that or thought that, but maybe you didn't quite say it that
I
way.
think there's also another piece too that when you're thinking about going into business, if it's not just going to be the two of you, but you're going to have employees or even subcontractors, you need to understand what influence you could have on them. And if you don't have a strong partnership, people may not want to be around you.
We were when it was my dad and I overlapping, two crazy passionate Italians. We're gonna lock horns. And, after a while I realized, that's not a real healthy thing to do in front of staff,
No, it is not.
So we'd always, I'd always really try to take that off campus or take it off hours and make sure that, we can, I mean, we're Italian, so we fight like hell, but then we hug it out after and love each other. But still, it's not always pleasant to witness, and not everybody understands that. So
And when you're hugging it out, your employees may not know that.
Correct. They usually didn't. So I wanted to kind of touch on another angle. You've been through some really difficult times across your journey. For other business leaders who are really trying to govern their business, trying to stay, balance leadership, how would you advise them to manage that while they too are dealing with some of life's personal storms?
I think that being able to be honest with your staff about what you're going through is really important. You can't expect to hide anything really from staff when you're going through such a hard time. And most people will understand. And so I think from a leadership standpoint, being honest as much as you can about what you're going through and trying to ask for help during those times. I think entrepreneurs tend to sometimes think that they can do everything themselves. But at moments like that, you really can't. You're just not capable. So
I
asking
think,
for help.
yeah, I think that's a huge point, Sherry, because I think a lot of times, as leaders, we got to be strong. We got to be strong for everyone. Even if our life is challenged or there's things going on that are weakening the foundation, we still want to be strong. And I think to your point is that's the time maybe when you be human and you
That's
say,
right.
hey, I've got things going on that are going to be distracting me, that are going to be taking me some time to process and deal with. And I need your help, need your support. And by the way, when you're going through it, I'll be there for you.
Absolutely. And I can't say enough about how great my staff were. They really, really, really were. Like I said, I'm indebted to them.
So I had the pleasure of knowing Jim while he was here, and amazing guy, incredibly personal guy. He's the type of guy you just immediately love. He's that type of guy. So very smart, very effective in your business, but also very human. He loved to cook. He liked to run marathons. He liked to dabble with his home brewing and other things like that. So as you reflect on Jim, and certainly he had an influence and impact on your life, where might he be sort of showing up and how you lead today? How does like Jim still kind of with you in spirit, if you will?
Jim had a very kind way. I always say there's a quote from Simone Weil. I just want to make sure that I have it right here, but it is a Simone Weil was a French philosopher and mystic studying like the nature of attention. And for me, I came across this little quote after he died, and it's attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. And for me, that just touched my heart because one of the exceptional things about Jim was that he would give you his undivided attention. He made you feel like you were the only person in the room. And I was immediately attracted to that when I was dating him, and it continued throughout our marriage. And I think that makes you feel supported and heard. I think that is very important when you are leading a team, that the people that you're leading have the opportunity to be heard, to be supported. They feel like you're listening to them. They feel like you're taking them seriously. And so I think as leaders, that was a big strength for Jim. People felt like they could approach him. People felt like they could be heard. So very, very important. And I remember that and try to keep that every day of my life.
That's awesome. Thank you. That's beautiful. So let's bring it around to the here and now. Let's reflect on Clinolots today. What's something going on in the business or in the industry that's really exciting you right now?
Well, I think that we all, our hope are that we're going to find cures or good drugs to help us with any of the diseases. So I think that the CAR T products for oncology are somewhat exciting for me, the different types of gene therapy. And those are very, very interesting. And Clin Audits is part of that, auditing those type of studies and trials. And we're also looking at a lot of FDA has put together a risk evaluation and mitigation strategy group for drugs that are need more attention than others. So we're part of that. So those two things are exciting to me from an industry perspective, from a human perspective. I mean, we really need to find cures for many of the cancers that are around.
For sure, for sure. And I guess in your industry, it's always changing, it's always evolving. There's always something new. When you very much you've built Clin Audits and with Jim's help, but now standing on your own and very much it was your own initiative from the beginning, and you built a company that's endured over time and has built a great reputation for integrity, for excellence in what you do. When you think about legacy, Sherry, and you look out now to the future, what do you want Clin Audits to stand for in the years ahead?
I think what you just touched upon, any company, I think it's important to have excellence. We are a quality assurance consulting firm, QA, and I think you have to have excellence. You have to have confidence. You have to have trust. And you also have to have integrity and subject matter expertise. I think those are all integral parts of a business, but dependability, timeliness, quality. I started my career at the Upjohn Company, which was in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And in every room, they had this poster that said, "Keep the quality up." And I've kind of integrated that so many years later. And I do believe that companies, at least mine, needs to keep that up. So I hope in the future that Clin Audits, whether I be with it or not, have all of those kinds of points still there.
Awesome. Last question. If any of our listeners wanted to connect with you to learn more about your journey, your story, or Clin Audits, what's the best way for them to connect?
Our website is www.clinaudits.com. There are ways to connect to us on that website. I think that might be easiest. And our phone number is on there. Our emails are on there. So that's probably the easiest way.
Excellent. Great. Well, Sherry, thank you so much for sharing your story so openly and for reminding us that it's all about resilience, love, and purpose is what truly sustains a business and sustains us in life. Your journey with Jim and with Clin Audits is really a testament to your strength through adversity and leading with heart. And it's really been an amazing journey you've shared with us today. Again, we've been speaking with Sherry Wilczek, founder and president of Clin Audits, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening in. And we'll see you next time. Sherry, thank you so much for sharing your story with us
Thank you,
today.
Ed. Thank you for the opportunity.
Of course. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.